research that resonates.
Schweitzer has not been wrong on any of his years and years of reporting on the Bidens.
Investigations that matter.
If your last name wasn't Biden, do you think you would have been asked to be on the board of Burisma?
I don't know. Probably not. But that's, you know, I don't think that there's a lot of things that would have happened in my life that that if my last name wasn't Biden.
The only entities, the only people that would report on this, and Peter Schweitzer, who deserves a Medal of Freedom, in my view.
This is The Drill Down with Peter Schweitzer.
Hi, this is Peter Schweitzer, and welcome to The Drill Down, where we relentlessly expose cronyism, corruption, and the abuse of power in Washington, D.C. The host of this program, Eric Eggers. Eric, dressed up with a tie as usual. How are you?
Just classing it up, Peter. Not everybody can pull off the, you know, the rugged American flannel look.
So are you saying I am actually pulling this off?
I'm absolutely saying that you're far more masculine than me, and all anyone needs to do is look at your wardrobe for further evidence.
Yeah, right. We were going to talk about fashion today, but we decided that the audience probably wants something a little more serious. So
something slightly more divisive than your fashion choices.
Right.
And that is the social division that we have had to endure in this country over the last half decade or more. And, you know, it's a big week for us here at The Drill Down because your book, Blood Money, has been out now for a week plus. We expect to hear news about where Blood Money ranks on the New York Times bestseller list later today. So by the time this podcast is out, you may have seen a Breitbart article about Schweitzer number one.
Let's hope.
But there's a lot of news still to come from your book. I mean, that's how dense this thing is with reporting on the role China has played in attacking this country in terms of our physical health and our emotional and mental health. And what we want to talk about today is, I think, as significant, if not more so. We talked about fentanyl last week and the Biden's connection to the fentanyl via a business partner of Hunter Biden's. And, you know, and there's a lot, that's a serious thing because fentanyl kills a lot of people. But this is as serious. And I think in some ways it's maybe more accessible because maybe not everybody knows someone that has died from a fentanyl overdose, but everybody has been engaged in the social division that has gripped this country over the last 4 or 5 years. And what I think you lay out brilliantly is actually the role that China and Chinese sympathetic Americans have played in it.
Yeah, that's right. You know, they view their approach to the United States as disintegration warfare. And it's what it sounds like. Their goal is to disintegrate or dissolve America. There was a book written about in 2010, highly influential in China. They adopted it as their strategy. And part of that is going after what they regard as America's soft underbelly. That's the word that they use. And the soft underbelly are the divisions and the conflicts that we have in the United States. You know, and we have these, we recognize that. I'm not suggesting that this is all China's doing, but they clearly are fanning the flames. And so you look at issues like racial division or political division or, you know, some of the social movements out there that are engaging in sort of violent protests. They are magnifying those because A, they're encouraging them, and B, they're trying to magnify those divisions. So you talk about what's going on in the street, right? The street protests, the street violence, the groups that are behind a lot of that in 2020 and today with Hamas. But then you also look at what's going on in our national conversation, so much of which takes place in cyberspace, and how they are trying to fan racial divisions in this country. And I would argue that if there's something optimistic about this book, people always say that my books depress them, anger them. Something optimistic to think about is I think we're actually less divisive as a country than it appears, because so much of what's happening online is being done by Chinese bots, by Chinese individuals working for the government who are posing as Americans. And they're trying to stake out extreme positions, you know, America's a white supremacist country, or I only like white people. And they're trying to do this to exaggerate the differences because they want us at each other's throats.
That's a really important point, I think, just to say it another way. And by the way, for the record, I've never said your books were depressing or angering to your face. And and I'd like credit for that. But I do think that the takeaway from this is actually this: if people think that we're a divided country, it may be because that division is artificially enhanced and funded by China. That's actually not a reflection of who we are as an organic country and as a population. And what you've laid out in the book, and you have the actual receipts, like there are money, there are political affiliations. I mean, this is a real thing. And I think there's a lot to talk about. and stuff people don't know about. Like, people don't realize the fact, the significance of the Chinese consulate in Houston burning, what that has to do with who showed up before the summer of protests, and the fact that these protests go all the way back to Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and we've got connections to these groups. But we're maybe not as fractured as they'd like us to think, but if we are fractured, it's because they're intentionally trying to make us so.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They're taking conflicts that exist. There are racial divisions in this country. You do have a group of people who think America is hopelessly racist. Everybody's a bigot, you know, systematic racism, et cetera. And you have other people, I think a very, very small group, who are basically anti-minority. Yeah. They only like white people. The problem is, in the cyberspace, China has a very sophisticated operation. It involves thousands of Chinese military personnel. Each one of those thousands has thousands of social media accounts that they've set up on X, on YouTube, and elsewhere. And in these accounts, they are posing as Americans, and they stake out the extreme. Half of them basically say, racist society, systematically racist, it always will be. The other half say, I only like white people. And this magnifies the conversation of what's happening online. And what it does is it leads a lot of people to be discouraged and say, oh, there is a lot of racists on both sides. And I don't think it's quite as pronounced as it is. They are exaggerating and intentionally. They wanted to do this in the 60s and 70s. It was part of their strategy. They certainly didn't have the cyberspace. They didn't have the capacity to do it. They now do. And I think they're quite effective with it.
How do you connect all the different accounts? I mean, how have you been able to sort of identify that they're Chinese linked?
Yeah, it's a great question. So in 2020, there were more than 170,000 Twitter, then Twitter, now called X, accounts
we
taken
down. We still call it Twitter. We're older white gentlemen. I don't think we have to keep up with the hip parlance of the time.
Is the blue bird no longer?
I don't know, but it's kind of like, you know, some people still call it, like my grandpa used to still call them the Oakland Raiders. You know, it's like, I will always call it Twitter.
We'll always call it Twitter. I think the blue bird is gone. I kind of like the blue bird. But in the summer 2020, they took down 170,000 plus Twitter accounts. And what they discovered was these were all people that were ostensibly Americans, and they had all American profiles, you know, all American dad, you know, all American single,
leaning into it.
Yeah, really leaning into
Man,
it.
Man, I'm really enjoying the barbecue on this celebration of Memorial
exactly,
Day.
Exactly. They'd have the little American flag there. The problem is that Twitter noticed that all the posts from these quote unquote Americans were going up from 9 to 5 Beijing time. That was the tell-all, which of course is in the middle of the night here. So, but those are only the ones that they detected.
Yeah.
And they took down, I think it was like 70,000 YouTube accounts in 2020 for the same reason. But so that's one side of the equation. The other side is we do know these reports from China where this is part of their strategy, and they have these large facilities where there are literally
like bots.
Bots and thousands of personnel who are running these social media accounts. So the evidence is there. The problem is you don't know exactly how big it is. And some of the accounts, when you look at them, you know, they're really quite good. They're very convincing. You think this is your neighbor, you know, who thinks you're a bigot and a racist, or this is a neighbor who you thought you knew who thinks that only white people are cool. I mean, it's very insidious and troubling, and I think it demoralizes a lot of people.
For the record, I would watch a movie about somebody who works at one of these Chinese like social division bot farms. They run an account, and there's some, you know, innocent, sweet American, like, oh no, and they just kind of kill them with them, and they fall in love online, and this political, and maybe a car chase as they try to. I'm just saying, this has potential.
Yeah,
I would watch that movie. But in real life, that hasn't happened yet. In fact, what actually happens is the opposite, is that they're effective at cultivating and curating American allies who don't realize they're being manipulated by this intentional effort to sow division in the country. And like, that's one example of it, the social media stuff. I know we have other stuff about TikTok that I think we'll talk about at a later time. But just think about this for a second. If on one hand, they're intentionally utilizing the social media assets to sow division. Meanwhile, as you've reported on in Red Handed, the people who run all these big tech companies that have the social media platforms, they love China.
Yeah.
Like, they're obsessed with the Chinese way of doing things. I mean, it's very insidious and the opposite of a virtuous circle that way. It's very alarming.
Yeah, no, I mean, you look at Mark Zuckerberg. We talk about him in the book. You talk about Elon Musk. I mean, Elon Musk, I think, has done a lot of great things recently on free speech issues. but he's very praiseworthy of the Chinese government because they built him a large factory for Tesla. And he talks about how efficient and great that government is. So, you know, it's a real challenge and it's a real problem. And it's another reason not to believe, even if somebody has their precious blue check on Twitter, not to believe actually who it is, especially when they stake out these real extreme positions. They are trying to divide the country. That's the air war, as I call it, in cyberspace. But there's also this ground war, which is the violence in the streets.
What a professional transition, Peter Schweitzer. Somebody's been talking about this.
I have my moments.
For a week plus. So talk about Mike Brown, right? Ferguson, Missouri. Maybe the first time we saw a law enforcement initiated shooting in which you then saw violence in the streets. We've seen these things happen. But Ferguson, Missouri, I mean, there was devastation. Yeah. And I think created the template that we would see repeated over and over again, the culminating, in fact, with George Floyd and in Minneapolis and then protests all over the country. So we're familiar with what it looks like in the street and the way the media reports on it. Talk about two groups, the Freedom Road Socialist Organization and the Party for Socialism and Liberation, and what they have to do with that.
Yeah, these are two real radical groups. They have cells around the country. In fact, where we are in Tallahassee, Florida, there is actually an FRSO cell in Tallahassee, Florida. And these are very radical groups, as their names clearly indicate. But they are particularly pro-Beijing. They both take positions that China does nothing wrong. They value, support, and want to encourage the Chinese Communist Revolution, and they want to bring that revolution to the United States. We also know that both of these groups communicate with Beijing and that Beijing tracks their activities. They report on them. There's a group in Wuhan, of all places, China, called the Center for the Study of Foreign Marxist Policies, that reports directly to the CCP Central Committee. And we quote from their reports of how great these organizations are, the actions they're taking, etc. These two groups, more than any, beginning in St. Louis in 2014 and up to the 2020 BLM riots, were at the forefront of the sort of angry, violent protests relating to race. And they particularly take an extreme position. So in the case of Michael Brown or in the case of George Floyd in 2020, there were probably hundreds of thousands of people out protesting or saying, hey, I'm concerned about how the police handled this situation, right? And I'm troubled by it. So, you know, a reasonable position. You can have the debate. FRSO and PSL say no. We need to abolish the racist police system. So they want the actual abolition of the police. And they are the ones that, will, in a lot of cases, would start throwing objects at the cops. They would start, you know, throwing Molotov cocktails, extremely violent actions. And this is all related to Beijing wanting social division in the United States.
I mean, you talk about this guy named Montague Simmons, who was one of the key organizers of the protest in Ferguson after the Michael Brown shooting.
Yeah.
He's a part of an offshoot of a group of FRSO, and he would divulge, and you talk about this in the book, in a presentation that it, you know, these Ferguson, Missouri protests, or everyone's, it's too much. We're kind of,
it's
coming
the community,
out. It's an organic thing, but he would actually admit that he brought 10,000 out-of-state activists to participate in the protests. And of course, those protests led to violence. They led to property destruction. I mean, you know, you and I have both watched the TV show The Americans about the Russian secret agents. Like, this is the kind of thing in the 80s Russia had spies doing. Like, they paid people to try to gather intelligence and then to try to create division and kind of gin up anti-American sentiment. Think about what you just said. In our hometown, in the capital of Florida, and in towns all across the country, Beijing has affiliate groups that are doing exactly that, but they're not hiding and dropping rock messages in parks as the Russian spies did. This is what they are openly allowed to do in this country, and like they're paid to do it.
Yeah. I mean, they've got cells in small towns in Missouri and Indiana. There's a town of 5,000 people in Indiana where they have a state prison. There was an angry protest carried out by these groups in that town in order to perpetuate these activities. But to go back to the situation in St. Louis, that's right. people had the impression that what was happening in Ferguson was organic. It was locals. You actually had.
I mean, I remember the CNN. Look at this. Everyone's here.
Exactly. Yeah. The community is concerned about this. And there probably were some locals there. But Montague Graham basically bragged in a presentation to FRSO, which we quote from in the book, that, no, we brought in these out of town hardcore activists to really gin up these protests. And they started doing the same thing the case of Trayvon Martin, which we cover in the book, but especially in 2020. Once you have the death in 2020 that tipped off the protests in places like Minneapolis, Philadelphia, New York, they were bringing in hardcore violent activists to precipitate violence and to sow discord and chaos in those cities.
And think about this, and I'm sure this is like the brilliant but also insidious and unfortunately destructive part of their strategy. Who are their unpaid but very eager volunteers and business partners in this effort? It's the media, right? Because the media is not interested in covering peaceful protests. They're like every night, and it's like, oh, look, looks like somebody's like arguing with a police officer. Let's run over there. The more people, the more activity, the more antagonism, the more violence, the better the TV show is. And so the more coverage it's going to get, which then sends the message to the people of watching it, hey, we must be really divided as a country. That's who we are. I mean, that all starts with an intentional action on behalf of China.
No, it's a great point. It's a huge psychological blow to the country. And so what happened in 2020 was FRSO, essentially, according to the Chinese reporting on the situation, again, I quote from them in the book, FRSO effectively took over the BLM movement. They were the ones that were kind of calling the shots. I think based on what we now know, a lot of the BLM founders were cashing checks. they were too busy cashing checks and buying second homes.
You guys are doing a great job. Yeah,
exactly. And FRSO were the ones that really fueled these violent, angry protests.
So let's connect some dots. And I want to ask you about something that we report on, and I'd seen this before, but I think you put it in a very different context. So 2020 is obviously the summer which everything kind of caught fire, that, you know, people would compare it to a modern day 1968, if you like, with Vietnam protests, civil war protests happening then. For us, it was just BLM, civil rights, your statues are going down, things are being renamed. I mean, everything kind of changed very quickly. And in hindsight, it actually makes sense that it would have been artificially fueled, because how else could something like that happen so quickly? But you talk about something that before the protest in the summer of 2020, a contingent of Chinese intelligence professionals from the Second Department of the People's Liberation Army, the Chinese Military Intelligence Unit, land at the Chinese consulate in Houston, Texas, in the beginning of 2020, posing as academics. And then intelligence officers working with Huawei, right, the Chinese military-linked technology company, identified and targeted Americans they hoped would get involved with at least peaceful protests. And they posted customized TikTok videos. I mean, they essentially recruited people to participate in these riots. And then in July 2020, the U.S. government demands that China's Houston consulate be closed, which, of course, prompted the burning of documents in the courtyard so that no one can know exactly what they were doing. I mean, it has to be related.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely related. The consulate was shut down for a couple of reasons. One of them was their support for these protests and the fact that Chinese military personnel were trying to fan the flames. The other part was the consulate, of course, was engaged in spying. But what's interesting is the spying part was kind of emphasized. Their involvement in these social protests in 2020 was kind of de-emphasized. But senior Justice Department officials later admitted that, yeah, they were absolutely engaged in this influence operation. And again, it was to support these sort of extreme versions of these protests. And they were using TikTok to teach people, here's how you organize a protest. Here's how you engage in disruptive activities. This, I think, was sort of a clumsy way in the sense that they had people doing it. Now that they have TikTok, now that they have some of these proxies that are operating around, they don't even necessarily need Chinese personnel anymore.
They don't need personnel because, as you noted, they've taken maybe from the ground in 2020 to the air that they're operating in these days. I want to just make this last point because we touched on this guy, and maybe we'll do another podcast at a later date about the other aspects of social division. But we talked about a guy named Roy Singham, who's funding not just these groups like the FRSO and the Party for Socialism and Liberation, but he's funding these groups that are helping to sow division. He is an American businessman who made money because of a business deal he did with Chinese sovereign wealth fund, and they bought a software company. But his, you talk about in the book, his ties to the regime are so substantial, he was invited to attend the Chinese Communist Party. But somebody, an Indian government official, alleges that he is associated with the Chinese propaganda arm of the Communist Party.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is an American businessman who's made money in China, and now other governments are saying, no, he's part of a Chinese propaganda operation, and his money is doing what in this country?
Yeah, he's poured $161 million into a group called the People's Forum, which sounds really friendly, right? It's a People's Forum. But the two people that run the People's Forum are members of the Party for Socialism and Liberation, PSL.
Oops.
They're the ones that actually run it. And what PSL does, I would argue, via the People's Forum is People's Forum supports Antifa activities. They support a lot of the transgender, radical transgender movement in the country. They support a lot of the BLM disruptive type protests. And what's interesting about Singham is, you know, he's an American who grew up here. He's really been a Maoist, according to his own explanation, since he was a young man. But the Chinese helped make him rich. I mean, this partly owned by the Chinese government investment fund effectively made him a billionaire. Once he made his money in the United States under good old capitalism, he moves to China, which is where he now lives. He's friends with Chinese officials. As you mentioned, he was invited to go to the Chinese Communist Party Congress, which is a very prestigious invite to get.
I've seen people removed from the Chinese Congress. I haven't seen too many people be invited there.
Yeah, exactly right. And so he is a figure that I think represents a manner in which Chinese influence is funding these groups in the United States. Yeah. I'm not suggesting he's not making these decisions on his own. He is. But he's clearly aligned with the CCP. He supports them. He buddies with them. He praises them. And foreign governments and foreign officials in South Africa and India have seen his activities there. And they see him as part of this government propaganda apparatus. He denies it, of course. But I think the evidence is pretty overwhelming. Just look at the positions he stakes out and the effect that he is having on the radical movement in the United States. It's increasingly pro-Beijing, and it's part of what China wants to accomplish in the United States.
Here's how I know that the reporting in this book is so important. It's because what we do with the Government Accountability Institute, and what we have done for the 12 years that we've been around, is we try to say, hey, here's something that everyone generally recognizes is a problem in this country. How come it's not getting better? And the answer that I think we try to provide evidence to support is because people are making money off of the status quo.
Yeah.
And what you've done in this book and what the research that our team has contributed towards is showing who's making money off of all the different problems. Everyone would recognize it doesn't seem like it should be this way.
Right.
And if you, again, the 2020, the speed at which things went from zero to 60, for lack of a better term, to where you can't even, like, we unquestionably changed names, took down statues. It's like, oh, this is what we're doing.
Right.
It only makes sense if you think that it's fueled and funded from external sources. And you point out, we had those external funding sources came from one country primarily, and that's China.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, we quote extensively in the book from Chinese propaganda officials and tearing down statues you mentioned. They actually began saying in 2017, 2018, the way that you undermine a society is by getting them to reject their historical past and rejecting national symbols. And once you start getting them to reject those, it's much easier to influence young people to get them to see things your way. So I think it's part of a concerted effort. It doesn't explain everything, but I think it explains a lot. And it puts this in the context of a war on America. We keep thinking we might have war with China in the future. We've talked about fentanyl. We've talked today about the social disruption. There's already a war going on. The question is, are we going to recognize it and do something about it? Or are we just going to pretend that it's not there and let China further undermine what's going on inside our own country?
I'm old enough to remember a TV show that used to be on. It was called Clarissa Explains It All. And I like that the modern drill down version of it is Peter Schweitzer explains a lot. It's not all of it, but it's a decent amount. It's enough to get started. You know, it's enough to win most conversations.
Yeah.
You know, you can pass your way through it. No, it's well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, we appreciate you always joining the conversation. There'll be more to report on my book, Blood Money. Please pick up a copy if you haven't already. You can go to thedrilldown.com to find out more about this podcast and the research that we're doing. And again, we appreciate you joining us. We know your time is valuable. Until next time. Thank you.